Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Fake the Nation, episode 163.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we gallivant around in flip-flops on sandy beaches, maybe. I am your host, Nikki Farsad. And as you hear this, I am potentially doing those things, or I'm stuck in traffic. Anyways, I'll be in Southern California throwing a baby at a couple of parents. Today, we're going to hear burning hot takes from the likes of Connie Wang, Christian Finnegan, Lindsay Boylan, Leah Bonema, and Selena Kopic. I know that sounds way too good for me to waste any more time with this intro, so let's just get started with topic number one. We read an article called "Why Girls Beat Boys at School and Lose to Them at the Same Time" by Lisa Damore at The Times. It was a really interesting article, and to talk about it, I'm joined by Fake the Nation regular Sina Ghaznavi. Hey, Sina.
Hey, hey, hey.
And I'm also joined by one of my great comedian friends, Selena Kopic. Hey, Selena.
Hello, Zagin. How you doing?
You guys, let's just first discuss what's happening. Basically, girls outperform boys academically, and yet boys end up with 95% of the top tier positions in the country's largest public companies. Did reading this article ring true to you? Like, did you experience any of this in school?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I grew up in a group of friends that were just like, oh, I didn't study. I'm not doing homework. I'm just going to do well on the test. And I was like, I don't know how to do well on tests. I have to study hard. And I was so upset that I wasn't able to keep up with them. And then there were always the girls that were also the top of the class that had, as this article pointed out, meticulous color-coded notes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful notes.
Yeah. That was me.
Yeah.
Same. This kind of gave me PTSD from high school because I remember this guy. It's like this guy was emblematic of the whole thing this article is about, that basically that we breed competence in women but confidence in men.
Yes.
as young boys. And this kid, like, when I was in high school, I remember there was this guy, we'll just call him Jim Brown or whatever. Jim Brown, that is the stupidest
Jim Brown.
Fake name. I just didn't
Hall
put any effort. I didn't put any effort into that at all. We'll call him James Newhausen. Okay.
You're like, I'm Rudy Giuliani. Okay, he's trying to pick a name at random. Okay. Joe Schmo, God. Joe Millionaire, sorry.
So Joe Millionaire Mansion? What? Yeah. Okay, he was this kid at school who was kind of like, hey, Miss Johnson, what was the homework? I don't remember. I wasn't listening. Like, he was, like, in all the AP classes, but, like, didn't work at them at all, but then somehow still ended up going to, like, a top-tier school, and I was just like, and, I mean, like, he was also always, like, scrambling to finish homework. You know what I mean? Like, I was, like, number two in my class, whatever. It's, like, a longstanding disappointment of my life that I wasn't number one.
Doesn't matter.
God. I know. I was a fucking piece of shit for being number two. Anyways, doesn't matter.
Oh, my gosh.
But, like, and then the top five were all girls except for one guy. And there was actually six because the number ones were tied.
Whoa.
Doesn't matter. Anyways, this is all so stupid. But my point is that this guy, Jim Newhausen, he just was all what, like, I remember just stressing out in this English class because this teacher was really tough and, you know, she's kind of crazy. And she was like, oh, Jim. Like, she just thought it was adorable that he was kind of ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And then I would be like, Mrs. Johnson, would you please tell me the parameters of the homework assignment you have for us tonight in terms of, like, I would roll out a red carpet. I would put up a marching band for her. I would do all of these ridiculous things so that she would treat me well. well so that she would like so that I could do well in her. I mean, I would work so hard for this class and then get the same grade as this other motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
And but this was always, and I just thought, well, then I guess I need to work harder so I can do even better than, it's like I could never get an A that was stronger than one of his A's. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because that's the thing. It's an A is an A is an A. It mm-hmm. really doesn't matter. Like an A minus is still an A and an A plus is still an A. And I was always trying to get an A triple plus, like a thing that doesn't exist. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I totally had, I experienced exactly this phenomenon growing up.
Oh, I definitely saw in high school and college guys who were like slacking off or like missing class because they were on the baseball team and had to travel. And I remember distinctly teachers and professors treating these guys like lovable scamps, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, they're not attending class. Right. Like, can I get any credit for being here and giving a shit, you know? Like, I do think that, you know, I mean, there's that saying, like, Lord, grant me the confidence of a mediocre white man. And and it's, I mean, I do see that to be so true. I have a friend who, this story perfectly encapsulates it. She was in a Lyft line, so, you know, assorted people in the car that get in. She doesn't know them. And somehow they're talking about rollerblading. I think my friend had her rollerblades or something. And so she's talking to this guy, and the guy goes, you know, yeah, I'm really good at rollerblading. You know, I just, there's one thing I don't know how to do, but I'm really good at it. And my friend goes, yeah, you know, I'm actually not very good at it, but I'm trying to learn. You know, I know how to do everything except for really stop. And so I'm not very good at it. And the guy goes, oh, that's the same here. I'm really good at it. Like,
right, it's the same thing.
Exactly. They have the exact same skill set. Her perception is she's not good at it. His perception is I am good at it.
Yeah.
And like that, there it is in a nutshell.
Yeah.
You know?
No, exactly. And it's funny because like what I think is interesting and how it's affecting the workforce is that it pervades within me to this day where my therapist, as I am a therapist, is always like, you know, challenging me to get a B. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
work, you're working for a B. And I was like, I don't understand. Like, you know, I don't know how to do that.
Interestingly enough, Nagin, my therapist says, it's okay. You don't have to be Andre Agassi. That is what we talk about.
Really?
Oh man, it was tough. I was a grown kid tennis
references.
Player. It was very difficult.
Oh my gosh.
Same thing. It's like we have that, but I think there's also an education system that sets that up for people, right? And the education system says, learn this, input, and then output for an exam. And girls in school were like, okay, well, I'll do all this. I'll follow all the rules. But in the real world where the economy works, you got to learn a quick skill, figure out how to, like, fail quickly and understand how you failed and then, like, do it again and then just follow your fear and get in there and just act like you know what you're doing. How many times? I mean, comedy is a great example. You got to get on stage not knowing what's going to happen, really terrified, really underprepared to a certain extent, and then just hope it works out. Mm-hmm. And then eventually you just keep doing that and then things get better.
Yeah.
And
then sort of the system reveals itself, you
know,
like,
well,
hard work doesn't always pay off. Like, it's a strange alchemy of like time. And this is the case for, I think, many industries, like timing what they need, what they're hiring for, if you get along with the person, you know, like, and it's just sort of dumb luck often, you know.
And you know what? What's really sad is that the real world is not about work. It's about marketing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's about self-branding.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it's all about self-promotion. And
Hillary Trump is a perfect example.
No, exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And I think that's something. What's weird is, like, I don't remember what is the lesson exactly that, like, Jim Newsenhausen, whatever the fuck I called him, was getting in when it came to like personal marketing and self-branding that I didn't get, you know, in high school. I don't know how he got the lesson. I didn't get that lesson because I was probably 10 years developmentally delayed from that one aspect. Like, he was able to like march into the workforce and get what he wanted mm-hmm. much quicker than I was mm-hmm. just because he could articulate that he wanted that thing
mm-hmm.
and that he thought he was a great fit for it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so what it's interesting to me that there's such a gap was created between boys and girls in school for this, you know, because it's not explicit. It's just this kind of patriarchal reaction, like you were saying, the professors that are like, oh, they didn't come to class, they're lovable scamps.
Yeah.
It's this, that's a gendered response to the difference between boys and girls as being adorable or something.
Yeah. And it's so just sort of subtle, and you don't even realize you're learning these lessons of somehow, you know, I think women feel like I'll put effort into this, and I'll show that I put effort in. And I think maybe it's a sort of a shaming of that men, the message they get is like, it's embarrassing to act as though you've put effort in.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Whereas women were given permission. Like, Hillary was so prepared for those debates, and guys kind of gave her grief for it. Like, huh? You know? But they love that. They're like, Trump doesn't even know what he's saying. Yeah. You know? Like, but I think those are messages we're getting as children of, you know, like, I mean, I remember when I was in college, there was a discussion of like, it seemed cool to not work hard. And I was like, my dad's paying 40 grand a year for me to go here. I'm going to work real hard. Okay.
Right.
And I'm going to let everyone know that I'm working hard. But
yeah, and that's the part of it too, is like broadcasting to everybody how hard that you worked to prove your competence, and like to prove that your competence is backed up with like several binders of color-coded notes, you know?
And it's like, no one cares, and you don't have to, you know?
Somehow that doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
Or very little.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember also trying to act like I was like a slacker, but really I was a very hard little worker.
Yeah.
I was trying to like look cool and be cool, but I mean, I wasn't. I was like a nerd. And only now in my 30s do I realize like I love being a nerd. I love sitting in front of my computer for hours and like working on some like, very complex little challenge and like working really hard is enjoyable for me.
Yeah.
But in the economy today, you just got to like go out and like brand yourself to your point, Nagin, and like promote yourself. This is why we have the Kim Kardashians. I also think this is like we're in a weird point in history in the information age where branding matters more than anything, limitlessly anything else in the world.
And it's so gross.
It's so gross.
That's what I thought was so gross about the Fyre Festival documentary is like you have all these like young media influencers. Whoa, I'm sorry. Just like choked at my breakfast. But they're all talking about like personal branding. And I'm like, oh, this makes me want to fling myself off a cliff. Like, I don't, but yeah, I mean, I do think that. Well, and a lot of that, what we now call personal branding, people just used to call sort of like having, you know,
friends?
Confidence or who needs friends when you got brand impressions? But, you know, I think people used to just call it like being charismatic or being confident, you know, and I mean, yeah, I think like I've worked at companies where we've had new CEOs and some, you know, come in and they've got a lot of bravado. And I think somehow people respond to that. And, you know, not everyone does, but. Yeah, it's just, it's such a strange phenomenon of sort of fake it till you make it, and that often pays off, and it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Well, in the article they said, we need to ask, what if school is a confidence factory for our sons, but only a competence factory for our daughters? And then the article laid out some ways that we can kind of fix this, this gap. And one of the things they talked about is, first, parents and teachers can stop praising inefficient overwork, even if it's even if it results in good grades. And I think that's a really good one, because at no point in my childhood did anyone say you're working too hard for this outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're working too hard for a good outcome. You're already like going to have a good outcome. You don't need to do the extra. Like no, at no point did anyone talk about the relationship between how much you work and outcomes that you might expect. And also, you know, I was praised for working so hard, like by my parents, you know, they were never like, oh, she's working too hard. You know what I
mean? That is like, that would be like the Twilight Zone if my parents were like, Sina, you're working too hard.
Yeah,
like, what?
What? Immigrant parents saying you're working too hard.
I think that's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, and I think, I know like my friends who've become teachers have said in your first few years of teaching, you're getting your feet under you, but if you find yourself in your classroom dealing with stuff until 7 and 8 p.m., it's like, okay, maybe this isn't for you, you know?
Right,
I mean,
right. You
really have to, at a certain point, be like, is this worth the time I'm putting in? And is this pathway for me, you know?
Yeah. You know what's a little bit sad is that there's all this stuff about, like, what we could do to make girls work less hard. But there's nothing in this article about, like, why don't we get boys to fucking be better? Like,
exactly.
Why don't they put in some goddamn actual work? You know what I mean? That made me a little angry.
I know. Yeah, I remember I was reading those. Yeah, like...
mean, hashtag not all boys, whatever.
Not all boys.
My God, am I going to get hate mail for this? Sorry, everybody. I love all people. Okay.
No, but it's true. Yeah, I feel like we so often are quick to be like, well, let's get to the root of the problem. The people who don't benefit from the system. And it's like, no, maybe we'll talk about the people who do benefit from the system.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, how about we retract that?
Yeah. I mean, because I think like I do. I mean, as much as I want to say to girls like, yeah, just like work as much as you need to get an A, as opposed to work more than you need to get an A plus a pat on the back or whatever. I also think we could benefit from like just more well-rounded people all around, no, regardless of gender, you know what I mean, in the school system. And another thing they talked about in the article is encouraging girls towards a different approach to school, one that's more focused on economy of effect rather than how many hours they put in. So, like, having a little bit less pride about what you put in and more about, hey, I was really efficient and got an A, you know, and I think that's actually, it's interesting because right now we're living in an age where people are like, I work at a startup and we work 17 hours a day, you know, and there's like you kind of like pride yourself on how much you sleep at the office. So that's kind of like trickling down right into school age children and in high school and stuff like that. And I think all around, we need to stop praising that.
Mm-hmm.
Hours of labor is not a great metric for anything.
And, mm-hmm. you know, those startups all try to make it easy and they have like bean bags. I went and did a project at one of those startups, which I will not name. They're non-existent anymore. But I was like, saw all these kids on bean bags. I was like, I can't do that. I got back pain. I got neck pain. I can't sit in a bean bag.
Oh, no. I need lumbar support, motherfucker.
Give me a Herman Miller chair. I need one stat.
Also, I love, they're always like paying a barely living wage. They're like, but look at this cool fish tank. Like, you know what I'd love? A living wage. You know?
But there's wiffle ball.
Exactly. This feels like a dorm because you live here. You know, like, no, right. No, thank you.
But even these startups, right? You know, all the tech startups, they made us these phones that get updated every week or every month or every year. The software gets updated. When's the last software update that we've had for the education system?
Yeah.
When's the last update to have?
Look at the man stumbling into a really good metaphor and not even trying.
But I think we need to just make
That's
it better.
That's a great tagline for your education campaign,
there we go.
Sina.
I'm running for office. I did inhale a lot. Constantly.
And it helped me think of good ideas.
I will inhale after this show.
All right, you guys. We figured out the gender divide in school-age children when it comes to the confidence gap and theme. All right, you guys, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to ask, is it ever too late to pursue a dream? Ooh. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until, that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8-exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing losing that money? I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, wow.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
And welcome back, you guys. Let's move on to topic number two.
We read a piece called Is It Ever Too Late to Pursue a Dream by Matt Giles for Longreads that details a 39-year-old dude who's seriously trying to become a basketball player. And we thought we would talk about the question, do you ever age out of pursuing a dream? So with me to talk about this question are the writer, the Refinery29 writer, Connie Wong. Hey, Connie.
Hi.
And the comedian and longtime veteran of Fake the Nation, Christian Finnegan. Hey, Christian.
Hi there.
So you guys, like... We read this piece about the guy. He's trying to become a basketball player. It's just hilarious because he's now, I think actually he was 39 when he started. Now he's like 40 or 41. Mm-hmm. What did you think of this guy? How did this story strike you of a dude this age trying to achieve this goal?
Can I say that I don't read a lot about basketball?
Me neither.
And I definitely don't read a lot about Canadian basketball, collegiate Canadian basketball. So this
which
was,
is what was we were reading.
Yes, new in many different ways for me. I mean, I felt part of me was like, yeah, of course, you can go after your dreams at any age as long as like you are financially stable, like you feel supported in achieving these dreams and it's not going to like throw your life into shambles. Like, go for it. But then on the other hand, like all the compliments that seemed to be thrown to this guy was sort of like patronizing in a way. I was like, oh, look at him. He tries so hard. Mm. His ankles are so swollen, you know, like he's so sweaty, like, but he's really trying. But I don't know. I felt a little
Christian, you are of the sports.
Well, specifically basketball. That's the only sport I care about.
Oh, okay. So this piece meant a lot to you?
It really spoke to me. I felt like I was reading a long, like a 5,000-word movie log line. Mm. You know, because you'd be like, okay, this dude clearly, you know, I think, I mean, I'm not trying to be cynical, but, you know, I admire the work he's putting in because he really is putting in the work. But I think the pot of gold at the end of this dude's rainbow is not going to be that he makes it onto a professional sports
team.
It's going
to be
that somebody's going to buy movie rights and
to his story,
a movie about it or something like that. And if so, God bless him, because like I said, the dude seems like a great guy. And,
he does. He's had a million jobs that were, you know, kind of doing the job, doing the grind, so he can make money so his wife could go to school and all that. I mean, it's a good...
Yeah, he's not neglecting. I mean, one of the things that I kind of liked about, you know, he talked about, this is the one thing for me. It's like, you know, he's got his kids and he doesn't seem to be neglecting them. I mean, maybe he is, but I mean, maybe they would think differently. Mm-hmm. But he's like, I just need this one thing for me, you know. And I think that every adult, certainly once you get past a certain age, and I don't have children, but I can imagine that you've got to feel like, who am I at this point? Like, where am I in this sort of...
Right. And it isn't a small thing he's doing. It's not like the one thing he's doing for me. He went back to college straight up as a freshman, you know, and is taking a 4-year, you know...
One class per semester. Oh, load.
Just enough to make the team.
Right. 2 hours a week or something. So not a huge burden,
but still. But the being on the team is the real time, you know, commitment.
Well, I think he's got to spend like just super amounts of time in the gym in addition to that just to get his body at a point where
he lose like 100 pounds or something like that? 150 pounds he lost doing this, which is also like, that
he's
was kind of inspiring.
Yeah.
He's a tall dude. Mm-hmm. But let me tell you what I thought when I first read this piece was I immediately thought about a recent episode of This Is Us. This Is Us.
Oh.
Okay. Do you watch it? Obviously you
do.
Okay. Do you watch it?
I know. I don't like crying that much.
Oh my God. Okay. No, it's a great show. All right. I watch the shit out of it. I cry every episode multiple times. And what happened in one... Okay. Spoiler alert. What happens in one of the episodes is like the Sterling K. Brown character and his wife, they like have a fight. And she is, she wants to be a dance teacher, and it's not a good time for their family because they need more childcare support at home and whatever. And he says, I'm sorry you realized your dream 20 years too late. And I started crying when he said that because I was like, how dare you? And obviously, like, how dare he? And what a shitty thing to say and all that. But I was just like, did she realize her dream of being a dance teacher 20 years too late? Like, maybe. Mm-hmm. And like, is there, do you guys have any friends or anyone in your lives or whatever that like is doing a thing that you're like, why are you doing that? It's too late for you.
I mean, I think that describes.
Yeah, go ahead, say it.
I mean,
are you talking about comedians?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is, rather in the spot. My birthday was Monday, and thank you. 26. No, I'm 46. And
no, are you really? Yeah. I didn't think you were 46.
Well, I am.
Well done. You look
That's
good, buddy.
That's kind of you to say. It's all internal, but but you know, it does make you start to kind of ask yourself, all right, what is my life now? What is it going to be? And in the business we have chosen, it does make you question, like, at what point is this vanity, you know, or at what point am I just doing this because I don't know what else to do? Mm-hmm. You know, what are the decisions I've made? You know, and I look at my stepbrother, who my former stepbrother, we were friends and our parents got married for a while. But
what?
Yeah.
But, it's the spinoff series. It's just that one sentence you said.
He was like my best friend in high school. And then our parents were married
That's
for like 10
so
years.
Weird. So weird. Okay.
But we're still best friends. But he is a guy who is very talented and, you know, was going to be a music producer, went to college, but then now works doing finance analyst shit.
Right.
And I have always been like kind of frustrated with him. Like, why would you do this? Blah, blah, blah. Well, now he's 47, I'm 46. He's pretty much got the next 20 years of his life set up. Mm-hmm. And I don't. you know what I mean? And so you make choices.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think you either pursue your dreams and then you spend your 40s biting your nails, or you suck it up and then you spend your 40s wishing you'd pursued your dreams.
Yeah.
Oh, so no one wins.
Nope.
So, I mean, yeah.
Kardashians win.
Like, wasn't it themselves?
Mark Maron who said something like, one of the things that made his podcast so famous and go viral in those early days is like him being really honest about his own career prospects, which hilariously blew up. And he became, you know, the guy he is because he admitted to saying basically these things of like, are you chasing your dreams or are your dreams chasing you? Like, at which point are your dreams chasing you? And I think when you're talking about, and it's usually people who are talking about doing something artistic, right? It's these stories are generally not like, I had this dream of being an accountant and I'm finally an accountant. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I decided to pursue my dream of being an accountant at the old age of 45 when I was clearly past my prime for using Excel. It's never usually not that scenario. It's usually something kind of more in the arts or whatever, mm-hmm. an athletic thing, a dance thing.
Maybe,
you know,
starting your own business. Like, that's sort of the non-artistic version.
Sure, there you go. There you go.
Completely.
And then also, there's really old people who go to medical school. I don't know why you said it like that. Yeah. There's really fucking old people that go to medical school. Yeah. You know, I remember my brother who was in medical school went to school with someone who was like much older. It was like an interesting, you know, it was just like an interesting thing that they were doing such a crazy career change.
Do you know Bob Powers?
Yes.
You know, Bob, he and I were, and maybe a couple other friends, we were joking about writing a screenplay about a bunch of 40-something comedians who all quit en masse and go to dental school. Together and you know, but that's like the deal. It's like kind of like a reverse of the sort of the way those movies usually are.
Yeah.
And then one of them gets caught like sneaking out and doing open mics at night and like, no,
right,
we're dentists now.
That's hilarious. Well, I mean, I think, and you're in a field that it one of these fields where everyone aspires, like has a dream about doing it, you know, there are people that have that dream. I mean, do you ever meet someone who's like older getting into journalism that you're like, what are you doing?
Well, I think one of the questions you have to answer is like, are you really good at this thing that you really want to do? It could be a dream, but you could suck at it.
Right.
You know?
True, true.
And then it might just be a hobby and you have to be okay with it being a hobby. Actually, no. Older people don't tend to really want to be journalists. I think as you age, you kind of realize that no one likes journalists except for other journalists, and even they don't like each other.
Journalists.
Yeah, I was gonna say, even journalists don't like journalists. Yeah. So.
Exactly. So journalism isn't really one that disillusionment sets in really, really early. But I do see this a lot. My dad pivoted away from his career in his mid-50s.
Wow. To what?
to have his own business. He owns a Kumon Learning Center in Eden Prairie, Minnesota.
Wait, a what?
A Kumon Learning Center. It's like a tutoring service.
Oh, those.
You have the logo with
the face that's not smiling.
I thought you
right,
said...
It's not smiling, is it?
It's like it's supposed to be a concentrating face, but...
I thought you said a Kumongering Center, and I was like, what is Kumongering?
It's like fear-mongering, but for coups.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, so how did that transition go for him?
Well, he was an electrical engineer in this very, very big company where he had very little autonomy, but he was pursuing a skill in a craft that he was really, really good at, like top of his industry. And it was so unfulfilling after a while, you know? And then he decided to do this pivot, but like because he had the, you know, money set aside to make this happen.
Does he find this more fulfilling?
So much more fulfilling.
Interesting.
He's a completely different person now. He makes a ton less money. He works actually more hours now, but he has so much more energy. He's happier doing it. But he was able to make it work. If he wasn't good at it, you know, if the business wasn't doing very well, I'm sure it would be stressing him out in ways that his former job, it would be a bigger stress for him, you know?
Right.
But you could do this at any age. I just think that if you're, you have to be open to the idea that you don't know everything, that the world is different. You have to probably learn different processes and communication styles and all these things, which he is open to. But you can do it at any age as long as you have the money.
I also think it's not all or nothing, you know? Mm-hmm. You can add something to your life instead of – it doesn't have to be a complete transition all at once. It could be a gradual shift, you know, where you're nights and weekendsing your ideas or whatever until, you know.
When did we come to this point where we're so sure now that like the ultimate in life is that we have to make money off of our passions? Like, you're not doing it right if your job isn't your passion.
Feels like a .com mentality thing that's blown up
to me
too
it's
much.
That sort of that boomer mentality is like, find a job that you love and you'll never work a day in your life. So tell that to a garbage man. Like, you know,
wait, but I feel like boomers were more like, get a job at a factory, make sure you have insurance.
See, to me, I think of it as that sort of like 70s, 80s sort of, you know,
children of the revolution.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah, their parents, I think, was very much
get
like
a job.
Yeah, that's more greatest generation.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Well, I think, you know, it's weird, like, as a comedian, because I feel like I know a lot of comedians, and I want to crawl into their brains and be like, what is your end goal?
What's your plan?
Because
I think
know a lot of people that are like, you know, they're comics. They've been comics for a long time, but they're not necessarily earning money from it. You know what I mean? And you're sort of like, oh, what do you, and some people I think are doing it just because they love doing it.
Yeah.
It's not about money. They have a day job. They're fine doing that day job. And then I know a lot of people that are really frustrated that they have a day job or whatever. And then I think even, you know, for myself, like, I have dreams and aspirations that are bigger than what I'm doing now, but also I'm a working comedian. Like, I earn a living doing this. I don't have a day job, and it, you know, and there's gradations to a dream. You know, like a dream isn't, there's steps along the way to a dream where you're just like, yeah. And then I spent many years as a sustainable working comic.
Yeah, it's like,
you know?
My dream is not ever have to sit in a staff meeting. That's
right.
My dream.
Yeah. Right,
my dream is to not ever have to wear dress shoes under any circumstances.
Right. Right. And like, I think, you know, by those metrics, there are a lot of people who are living their dream. I think we get so confused by a dream because for this guy, is it I'm me or I'm LeBron James? You know what I mean? It's like, it's that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, we have to, there are points between where we turn everything into a kind of celebrity glamour story, and it's not, dreams aren't necessarily about that.
Well, and again, it like you were kind of implying, it's not necessarily all about the goal. It's like, how do you want to spend your day to day life? Like, for this guy, it's like, I kind of want to go play basketball again today. You know what I mean? That it's like, that's kind of the way I feel about comedy is, I have sort of existential worries, and I definitely could use a massive hubris injection at this point. I feel like once you've been doing comedy for 20 years, I feel like that's what I struggle with now, is that I don't have that just foolish belief in self that I used to have that everything's going to work out, you know? And, but
oh,
I mean.
So you're kind of suggesting that you, like, it's just not even likely for you to have a ridiculous, reckless dream, you know, in midlife because it's just your confidence level isn't built that way?
For me, I can't speak for everyone. But you know, you've been to the dance at a certain point, and you kind of see the way. I mean, I'm maybe a little more cynical than most people, but I think that, you know, when I think about, well, how do I want to spend my day? It's like, well, I want to do stand up. I want to write more material. I want to chase that buzz, however fleeting it must
be. You know, you don't want to be a financial analyst.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
And I will suffer the consequences.
I mean,
we're the real brave ones, us artists.
Well, and I think journalism is similar because there's not that much money in it, right? Like, it's not like you're doing it. You will have dreams of being really financially solvent for a good part of your career as a journalist before you actually might access money through something else, like a book sale, like that went really well.
And that happens to like 1% of journalists.
Exactly.
And then you'll find out that nobody buys books, and that's a hell all of its own.
That's true. Yeah, I don't think I know a single journalist who was like, I went into this industry because of the job security and the paycheck.
Right, right.
But it's also like they can't, like, I can't do anything other than what I do. Like, I frankly don't think I'm good enough at anything else, but I also don't think I want to do anything else. Like, if I'm not doing the thing that I do, then I'm really screwed.
Yeah.
If I could go back, though, if I had one foolish dream, I would be a backup singer.
No,
like,
really?
not like the guy. I want to be the dude in the back with the hand on his ear, like singing.
And then two other people flanking you.
Yeah. Just in the background.
Just, what does that would seem like fun to you? Or what?
Yeah. It really does.
It just literally seems
because I used to love singing, but I don't. I've learned that I don't really enjoy singing being the guy.
The center.
But I like singing harmony.
Oh, okay.
There's still time, man. There's still time.
Learning new things about Christian food. All right, you guys. Let me know. What do you think? Should people be pursuing their dreams at any age? Obviously, yes. But also no, a little bit. I feel like that's... I feel like that's where we landed on this subject. Let's finish things off with our final topic of the day, topic number 3. You guys, joining me on this next segment is comedian Leah Bonema. Hey, Leah.
Hey, Nagin.
And candidate for Congress, who is primary challenging Gerald Nadler in New York's 10th district, is Lindsay Boylan. Hey, Lindsay.
Hello.
We're going to talk about this article we read in the Times called The Ridiculous Fantasy of a No-Drama Relationship by Laura Hilgers. And I was immediately catapulted back into my online dating days. I remember reading No Drama all the time on profiles, and I thought I knew what it meant, but now I feel like I'm not sure. So are you guys familiar? Have you seen the No Drama thing? Are you familiar with it? What are your thoughts?
I don't want to be a dramatic and jump over other people. After reading this article, I came into it thinking No Drama meant something else. And I feel like this person is on the dating apps and obviously has a much better idea of what No Drama means than I do. So I don't want to be like, oh, I don't think that's what No Drama means, because I don't want to be that person who tells people what things mean.
But what did you think it meant?
I thought drama meant...
Well, first of all, you've heard people say that,
I don't want no drama.
I want to date someone without any drama. Yeah.
Yeah. And I always took it to mean, I don't want you to have problems. I don't want to hear about you going through stuff. I always took it to mean, don't put your shit on. I don't want to date somebody who, like, you can go through everything and need support, but I don't need that. I don't want you to get mad at me when you're going through things. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, there's some people that like to make huge things out of things that don't have to be a thing. Mm-hmm. And because we're going through life and life has a lot of crises, you don't want to be with somebody who is making a big deal out of literally nothing. And that's what I thought No Drama meant.
Are you familiar with No Drama?
Yeah, and I read it, and I shared it with my husband, and we both laughed. because I interpret No Drama to be like, listen, you keep your feelings to yourself. Or I don't want to have this conversation. And if I saw, I'm trying to remember back when I was single, And probably my now husband did say something like that, which is so funny. But I think it's just it's unreasonable to think that people's what happens to them in life is not going to be shared with someone who's significant. So I when I read that, I'm like, I read it as I'm not looking for something serious. Because if you get into life, you're going to get into these things. Maybe I hear what you're saying. There are people who you'd prefer not to deal with because of the way that they approach crises, right? Like we all have stuff happening. But my initial read was, you know, this – I want to keep things light and airy. Like we'll go to a painting class together and then we won't talk about it afterwards kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I just – that's
– Now that I understand the meaning of it, I would be like, oh, I would never want to date any of those people. You know what I mean? Now that I get where – like what you're saying that that's what that means, no drama, then I would be like, oh, then you would definitely never want to talk to those people because everything is drama.
Yeah. Right, right, right.
So that – I would read no drama as we're just
fucking. Yeah, like I – so there's two – right. There's like – I read it as someone like – okay, when I was dating and someone said no drama, because I have single dude friends and they say all the time, I mean, I just want to date a girl who has no drama. And and it's funny because they also, they talk to me about these women who do seem to be dramatic about things. Right. Yeah. And I'm like always at I'm always like, who are these women you're dating? Like, I don't have any friends that are that fit this description. So who are you date? I don't know any women like the women you guys seem to be dating, which
seem to be dating.
Which,
which who knows how they're interpreting it,
which leads me to believe that they are messed up with the way that they're interpreting situations. And they have a they're probably recalcitrant and have no flexibility for someone else presenting them something outside of their worldview or whatever, right? Yeah. And so that's what it seems like to me is happening is, which is I think more in line with what this article is saying, is that no dramas come to mean don't have any problems. Like, don't have any problems in your life. I can't handle it. I have my own problems and I don't want to also take on your problems. And I think in a healthy relationship, as you were saying in the beginning, Leah, like, you want to be like, no, I get that you're going to have problems and I'm here to support you. No, I think the drama people that like make a mountain out of molehill, what if those people are just heinous? They're not, you know what I mean? They're not just like being dramatic, like they're heinous. And then everyone else, they're a fringe element. Everyone else is just normal amounts of like, you know, my boss is really fucking killing me. Let me talk about it. It's not, there's no drama there. It's just like,
yeah, it's just a whole person.
Yeah, it's just a three-dimensional, it's just like a three-dimensional human being.
I think what Laura, now once I understood what drama meant, I was like, oh yes, that's such an astute comment to make that like these people don't want to have to deal with a human being.
Yeah.
And I think, and I love men, you know, before anybody calls me a man hater, I have one and I talk to my dad on the regular and, but I do think there are men out there that what they're basically saying is like, I have male friends. I'll come back to finish that sentence. Obviously, I didn't take my med this morning after I have this sentence. I was just talking with a male friend of mine. We were just hanging out and he's dating this new girl. They've been out multiple times and I go, what does she do? And he couldn't tell me.
What?
Yes. And he had an idea of the area in which she spent her all of her days. But I was like, do you know, does she know what you do? And he was like, oh, yeah. And then he then proceeded to tell me all the things that she knows about him. So I was like, oh, so that, and now that I understand what no drama means with the author clarifying it, I think we have a whole group of men out there, you know, guys, I love you, but that are like, if anything is not about me, I just can't take it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I am not ready for, there are people that don't want a full partner.
Yeah.
They don't want to have to hear about your stuff and you know what I mean? Because they're like, I need it to be about me.
Leah, can I just point out that your feeling is borne out by some statistics? Tinder found that heterosexual men were 3 times more likely to use that phrase on their profile than heterosexual women. Profiles of gay and lesbian users included the phrase much less often, interestingly enough. So there is a, some very particular heterosexual dynamic going on here.
That's fascinating.
It's so fascinating. OkCupid found that men overall were 10% more likely to say this than women overall, regardless of sexual orientation. They found that 47% of millennial men said that they were looking for no drama or something, quote, drama-free in their profile. 25% of Gen Xers and 12% of baby boomers. So it's definitely something that's more common, you know, among the, you know, the millennial population.
That's fascinating, actually. That would be the only statistic that, like, completely sort of surprises me.
Oh, interesting.
Because it's saying the younger generation is less interested to a certain extent in getting into, like, the whole conversations.
Yeah.
Those and, kinds unless, of things.
Right.
But it could also mean they don't want social media fights. I don't know. You know what I mean? Sometimes I feel like the younger generation, the so much of it happens online.
Yeah.
And I think some people are like, I don't want to be with a person who is, like, fighting with me online all the time. Yeah.
I've said this before, and I may have – I did a for people who are interested, on the July 4th episode of Fake the Nation was an unladylike Fake the Nation crossover where I did.
Oh, this sounds awesome.
A how to date online effectively. Like, I did a pep talk basically on how to date online. Because I did it very well. And so listen to that episode if you want to know my tricks of the trade. One of the things that happened with the dude I'm with, and I may have said this on the show before, is that he, when we started dating, he never texted me. I mean, he's a millennial squarely, right? But, like, literally never texted me. And he would just call me.
Like,
on
why
the
are you calling me?
I was like, what is the phone app on this phone I've never used? Where do I put it? Oh, to my ear. You know what I mean? It was like ridiculous. And he was just like, hey, are you free on Tuesday for dinner? Like, it was like that. And I was like, yeah. And then he'd be like, okay, great. Well, can you watch and meet me at 7 at this point? And I was like, okay. And it was like, that was it. It was like he made these phone calls. And then he only called me, no text messaging at all for like 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And it was glorious.
Sort of because, charming. It's like writing you love letters.
Oh my God.
It's so easy.
It is. It was remarkable. It was remarkable because we didn't get into, there was no drama in terms of like me interpreting text messages, which I feel like I spent lots of time doing with everybody else I dated. I spent a lot of time interpreting written, emotionless texts and emails.
What is that comma there for?
And he likes the
tweet. Why is there one word in the whole
message?
Yeah, I sent you a paragraph. Why is there one word? Which is how my relationship started with my husband. Yeah.
But so I think that you're right. There's something there's an added element of drama that happens when we include, when social media and texting are a part of it.
Yeah, that is.
I also don't want to have to guess stuff. You know what I mean? Like, because I feel like because there's so much drama in the world, I need some kind of assurance in my personal life. And that assurance need to be that I trust that you will tell me if something big is happening. And otherwise, I'm going to let it go because I can't.
Yeah.
So it's because I'm so much drama, I need a direct, I don't want to, you know, have a theater presentation when you have to give me information. That's how I kind of.
Yeah. I mean, look, Jessica Carbino is a sociologist in Los Angeles, and she read, you know, she interpreted some of these statistics, and basically her take is that people in their 20s and 30s, when they say they want someone drama free, they're looking for women, the men are looking for women who are, quote, lower maintenance. And I think there's a weird vestige here of the ideals of the 50s, right?
Right,
and
Can't you just cook the dinner?
Yeah, just you do it, and then I'm the man. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you do all of the things, but don't talk about it, and I'll just be here, like, being a guy. And
But also be evolved. So right. Just do all the things
also,
and
I
be evolved.
Have a conversation with you.
Right, yeah. But I also want you to have, intellectual heft, but only when I want to.
And when your opinions don't vary that much from mine.
Again, I don't. I'm so... again, I just want to say about this that we're literally read an article that did have a lot of sociologists and psychiatrists and statistics in it. So I don't want to be – we're not man-hating here because I'm
I'm going to have to sign off on this show if we are.
But you never have to say that you're not women-hating. Yeah. Oh, you know what I mean? You only have to tiptoe around the eggshell egos of a man.
Well, that's why I wanted to, you know, the thing in the back of my mind is the term gaslighting. And my husband and I are always like, he doesn't think it's a thing. I'm like, it's a thing.
It's definitely a thing.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so I think, the article also mentioned, so that's like the younger dudes. When the older dudes say it, the experts found that they mean that they don't want to deal with your previous entanglement. So if you're a divorcee, you have a kid, you have an ex-husband that's still that you have to deal with, co-parent, whatever, they don't want to deal with it. So there you go.
I think it's fair if somebody doesn't want to deal with it, and then it's fair that you know that they don't want to deal with it, and then maybe you want to be with somebody who wants to deal with it.
Right. Again, like people come cooked. Like you can't. I think
it's gonna be like good luck finding somebody.
Right. Good luck finding somebody. Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. And I've there's like, you know, there's men in my family who are still single and like in their 40s, and I'm like, you don't want to recognize that women come cooked. Like they've got ideas. Like they're not.
Just tell them to take that off their OkCupid profile.
Yeah.
But it is kind of good that it's there because that way women have a warning.
Yeah. Right. Red flag.
That way you know this person is not for me unless I just need a good dicking and then I'm going to walk away from it.
A good dicking is how we're going to end that segment.
She's not signing off on that.
She's running for Congress and she would never say that. And,
that was Leah Bonema.
That was Leah Bonema, just so we're clear. You guys, that's our show. I want to thank you for listening, and I also want to thank the production team here at Fake the Nation. That's our producer, Harry Nelson, our audio engineer, Andy Christens, and special thanks to Bry Moore. Gabby Alter wrote our theme music, and Lily Fleshler helps out with research. And dear listeners, we'd love to hear from you. You know this. Send us your feedback, topics we should be chatting about, guests we should have on the show. You could leave us a voicemail at 347-770-4981, or you could drop us a line at comments@fakethenation.com. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, because that literally does help people find the show. That's it. We'll be back next week for more summertime, because it'll still be summertime.